This is WHYY.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Today is the deadline to pass Pennsylvania's state budget. Legislators, teachers, parents, and other stakeholders in Philadelphia are calling on the Commonwealth to help fund its public schools for the coming year. So will lawmakers in Harrisburg approve a proposed Philadelphia-only $2 a pack tax on cigarette sales to help close the district's multi-million dollar deficit? The answer this morning is not clear. We have three guests to discuss the school district's ongoing budget crisis and how it's affecting the city's students, families, and teachers. Joining us by telephone is Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. She served for 8 years as Governor Ed Rendell's Chief of Policy and joins us from Harrisburg. And I'll be getting right back to you, Donna. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great. Thanks, Terry.
It's Marty. But that's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. You're not the first one to do that, and I take it as a compliment, so that's not a problem. Let me introduce our two guests here in the Philadelphia studio. Sam Reed III is a literacy teacher at Bieber Middle School. In fact, was there for 16 years. In September, he will move to the U School, and that's one of the three new innovative high schools opening in North Philadelphia in the new school year. And Sam Reed, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you here. And also with us is Terilyn McCormick. She's a West Philadelphia parent. She has three children in the Philadelphia Public Schools, one at Kappa, that's Creative and Performing Arts, and two at Penn Alexander. She's the founder of Orange Octopus. It's a consulting firm working in the field of corporate real estate. And Terilyn McCormick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. Great to join you.
Nice to have all three of you with us. And Donna, if I can begin with you, you are in Harrisburg. The news from this morning is a little bit of negotiations going on, some vote trading on pensions. If the Democrats can sign on with the Republicans and the governor, perhaps they can get this $2 a pack tax on cigarettes. Does that seem like a fair deal to you in the sort of sausage making of legislation?
Well, I think that typically what happens is the budget and taxes are connected. And so what typically happens is the Republicans and the Democrats will reach agreement on what they want the budget to fund and what the revenues are needed to support that. And in this case, what the governor and the Republican leadership have said is we need Democratic votes on the budget and we need Democratic votes on the governor's top agenda item, pensions restructuring. And the problem with that is that in the budget case, they have all the Republicans lined up, so they'll have Republican votes, and the Democrats can also put up votes for that budget bill if it has what they want.
Right.
In the case of pensions, the bill is not good enough to even have enough Republican votes. So what's happening is that they are saying to the Democrats, if you can't put up votes for a bill that our own guys don't even want to vote for, we won't fund the Philadelphia schools. I don't think that's not typical, and it's not a good situation for Philadelphia.
So what is your pitch? You're out there in Harrisburg. What is your pitch to legislators?
Well, my pitch is that I think that obviously we need to do some hard thinking about how to fund pensions in this state, and we need to get a bill that is one that has the strong support of Democrats and Republicans, and they're not there yet. And they need to work harder to reach a compromise on pensions that the caucuses can support. And this sort of bullying to get Democrats on board for the cigarette tax is a reflection of the weakness of the bill. And people ought to take a step back and think about that. And I also think it's a pretty tragic thing when we are saying to a community that wants to raise its own taxes, to fund its schools, you can't do so. You cannot fund your schools. Even though you have an enormous desire to do so, we, the big bad state, is going to be in the way. And I think that's pretty obnoxious. Mm.
And what we're talking about is something that was passed by city council, but it won't go into effect unless the legislature signs off on that, and the idea of a $2 a pack tax on cigarettes in Philadelphia only.
Correct.
Are you comfortable funding education by people smoking? I mean, you know, Donna?
Well, remember, we have a multi-billion dollar school district budget, and so this would be a very small piece of the budget. You know, in the high end, it would raise about $80 million a year against a, you know, nearly $3 billion budget. But, of course not. Who wants to do that? We should be having adequate state funds to fund our school district. Our school district has weathered a $300 million cut from the state, so we have very little choice. You know, we've continued the sales tax and dedicated those funds for schools. We have a relatively high property tax and wage tax, so there's not a lot of room because the state is failing to meet its responsibility.
Let me get our two guests who are with me here in our Philadelphia studio in on the conversation. To you, Sam Reed, you've been teaching in the Philadelphia School District for 16 years at Bieber Middle School. Uh-huh. How would you sum up this last year of teaching for you and your students?
Yeah, so this last year was super challenging in terms of, first of all, Bieber was on the closing list last year. So we literally got saved, got off the closing list, and then we got surprised with budget cuts. And so we lost staff, which created quite a strain in the school in terms of being able to have enough adults to support the kids with their needs.
And how big were your classes?
The classes were normal size, but then you just didn't have the other adult support in terms of like NTAs, hall monitors, other supports. And again, our rostering had to change in terms of being able to offer a variety of like expressive arts classrooms as well.
But did you feel like you could be the teacher that you wanted to be this past year?
It was very challenging.
I get that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you could do the kind of work that you feel like you are?
Well, I call it finding the cracks to do the work that I have to do, right? And so I had to find the cracks, and when I found those cracks, I was very successful. And part of the reason why I'm actually even moving to a new school is that I think this school is going to allow me to have not the cracks but the space to do the work that's great for kids.
Can you give us a small example of one of those cracks you feel like you were able to get through?
Okay, so for example, at Bieber, because we were put in the closing block, one of the reasons that kept us off the closing block was that Science Leadership Academy set up a campus SLA at Bieber. And so there were two co-located schools. And so there were tensions around, the kids not feeling like, oh, they took our eighth graders were going to go on the third floor. And now the third floor was, SLA had the third floor. And so in social studies, I had my students, we were doing inquiry around the connections between Latin American and African American cultures. And this kids up at SLA Bieber, they take a Spanish class. And so I had our kids write pen pal letters to the kids, and they were like pushing back.
The kids on the third floor, right?
Yeah, the kids on the SLA kids, right, on the third floor. And my kids were like, oh, we don't want to write letters to those kids. They don't like us. We don't like them. And anyway, I'm like, well, you have to do it. They did it, and it created a bridge for the kids to start saying, you know what, they're kids just like we are. And so that's an example of like using curricular opportunities to kind of deal with some of the tensions around.
And I want to pick up on some of the things that you just said there, Sam Reed. To you, Terrell McCormick, starting in the fall, you'll have three children in the Philadelphia Public Schools. What was it like for your two kids, one at Kappa and one at Penn Alexander last year?
I think, you know, to echo Sam, it was a challenging year. So my son at Penn Alexander started the year without a counselor. One of our counselors, one of the itinerant, serving five schools and showing up at Penn Alexander every Friday and a half day, another, just a completely insufficient for the school, as well as not having a nurse 5 days a week as an asthmatic. And I have to, live with the fact that there's not a nurse there 5 days a week. But I think largely at Penn Alexander, due to the additional funding, so I know a lot of people want to say this isn't, shouldn't just be about the money, but the reality is the money really matters. And I can see it very clearly between my two schools with the additional money that Penn provides, just allowing the classrooms to be smaller, the resources to be in the school that are really needed for a school to function. So contrast that to Kappa. We lost $1 million from our budget last year. So 10 teachers gone from the school, additionally aides and other folks. And I think what Sam was saying about climate was very true. Mm. When you have fewer adults in a building with, they look like adults, but they're not, it affects the climate. So, a rise in petty crime, a rise in kids cutting class just because there aren't people supervising them from an adult perspective. And so it's very challenging to see what happens in a school without adults, without resources. But on the flip side, also still seeing lots of amazing things happening, teachers with great commitment to the kids and trying to fill the gaps as best they can. So.
But obviously a commitment from you, since your youngest is about to start kindergarten at Penn Alexander. So you have made a commitment to the public schools in Philadelphia.
I have.
Why is that?
I'm a daughter of public school teachers. But I also feel that there's incredible value for my kids being in a diverse environment. We certainly could look at other options and at times have thought about it, but I ultimately know that they benefit from the public schools. I believe in the model. Mm-hmm. I think we should all be able to send our kids to the same kind of schools, and they should have the right resources for all our kids.
To you, Donna, and you've been on the show, and we've done many, many shows about the public school system and focusing largely on Philadelphia. Do you think people are coming away with an idea that everything is a mess in Philadelphia, that there aren't good teachers, there aren't committed parents? I mean, it's one of the reasons we wanted to have Sam and Terrellyn join us, because this is a problem with many stories.
Well, it's interesting. I would say that when this year, in talking with legislators, no one has said to us that they think things are a mess in Philly. They've met extraordinarily articulate teachers and parents since January. People from Philadelphia have been coming up to Harrisburg and educating legislators about what's going on. I think that Bill Hite has been an extraordinary spokesperson for the really wonderful things the district's doing and the extraordinary struggles of laying off 5,000 staff, selling and closing buildings, having only 3% of the funds be used for administration, which is about a quarter of what most districts are spending. So I think that the story about things being highly dysfunctional in Philly, while people know it's challenged, right, I don't think that's the narrative. And I think, in fact, people up here understand that the city council has put up votes for taxes for the district, and they also understand that we have done a lot of right-sizing. I think what happens, however, is to change the situation for Philadelphia and restore, let's say, $300 million that was cut is expensive.
Right.
And you don't just have Philadelphia. People are here from William Penn School District today and Upper Darby School District and Allentown. And when the state imposed that very large cut in 2011 of $1 billion, it created a hole. And the legislators don't see a way out of that hole because of the control of the Tea Party in the House, increasing numbers of Tea Party in the Senate, and in general, a fearfulness among any elected official to talk about revenues. But the experience that Sam shared of how finding a way to get things done, what happens when teachers come up here and superintendents is they make an extraordinary case for how creative they are and how they find workarounds. And I think what's unique for Philadelphia walking into next September is the ability to wonder whether that's even going to be feasible with another 1,300 layoffs that are likely to happen as a result of what's happening in Harrisburg today. Workarounds are not really going to be a viable option for the teachers and the principals and the kids in the district.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Donna Cooper, Executive Director of PCCY. That stands for Public Citizens for Children and Youth, an organization here in Pennsylvania. Sam Reed is a teacher in the Philadelphia Public School System. Terrellyn McCormick is a parent. She has 3 children coming in September who will be attending public schools in Philadelphia. We want to hear from you. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. How do we fund these schools? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows 6 enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
As music critics, we love making lists, especially the best albums of the year.
But 12 months is such a long time to wait.
So this week on Sound Opinions, at the mid-year point, we'll name the best albums of 2014 so far.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. A new breed of television has arrived, and it boasts four times the definition of the best HD TV. But is your cable company ready?
It's a real issue to try and get all that extra picture detail out to the TV where you can actually watch it.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with child advocate Donna Cooper, teacher Sam Reed, and parent Terrellyn McCormick. We are talking about what it looks like today, the ongoing budget crisis in Philadelphia involving the public school system. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. If you want to weigh in on this issue, if you have any solutions to what we're talking about, we want to hear from you as well. Terrellyn, I know you wanted to add to something that Donna was talking about, whether this is the sort of new normal.
Yeah, I think the sad thing is we're fighting desperately right now to maintain what we would generally say is unacceptable. Again, we're not, this budget that we're trying to preserve isn't going to increase the teachers in our classroom. It's not going to provide nurses 5 days a week. There's still going to be schools without counselors. So I think it's important that we continue to realize we're just fighting to tread water here, and it's a sad state right. that might not even be possible.
Well, even going back to Penn Alexander's, you said some of the funding comes from what? The University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And draws from the people living in the area. And I'm assuming at the school there are people that have additional dollars, so they need to raise money for a school trip or even supplies.
Yeah, so
parents
both schools
can fill in.
Yeah, both schools. Parents are, both at Kappa and at Penn Alexander and all over the city, parents are funding more than they've probably ever before. Not just supplies. I mean, there's schools where, parents have funded the secretary and sometimes the counselors. So it is an unusual situation. It's also highly unfair. Mm. Not all schools can do that, and they don't have the parents with those resources.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about schools that are largely low-income mm-hmm. students. How do those parents raise money?
I don't think they have the same advantage that the other schools do. It just is widening the gap because it's very hard if it's your local community and you have the ability, you're going to try to supplement as best you can. And I think that's what's happening. Yeah. But it's just about your ability to do that.
You want to add to that, Sam?
Yeah, basically to piggyback, what we're doing is we're creating schools that are winners and losers. And all of it is primarily based on resources. So I think we just need to think about other ways and other sources of funds. And that may include, we talk about, making sacrifice, but what about some of our corporate citizens making more sacrifices in terms of Comcast with their real estate tax or other sources of funds? I think we need to think outside the box about other funding sources. I'm sorry.
Instead of going sort of back to Harrisburg every year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense to you, Donna?
Well, in general, we need to make sure that local communities are putting up their resources. And I think that the property tax abatements that have been given to very profitable companies are worthy of us revisiting. But that's not going to generate a ton of money, even that, because it's just one building. Or let's say, even if all the tax abatements were pulled back, it wouldn't close the gap. The state of Pennsylvania is one of the states in the country that's doing the worst job funding its schools. And our state constitution rests the requirement of a thorough and efficient education and the resources for that with our state elected leaders. And I think they need to be held accountable to do that. There's no state in America that isn't dependent on substantial investments in its state. And typically states are funding about 50% of public school costs. Hmm. But in Pennsylvania, we're down to 35%. So we have gone dramatically backwards. This crisis that we've been in this year is now a four-year-old crisis. I think that expecting that we can come up with enough resources to fund our schools locally, it's not feasible because we will have such high local tax rates that we will begin to force people to move out of the city at rapid rates.
But Donna, we have a governor who has said, and in the years that he's been in office, he is opposed to raising any kind of taxes.
Well, he raised taxes. He imposed a Marcellus-style tax on the community impact fee. He increased taxes for transportation. He increased the gas tax. So he says that. But when coalitions have been strong enough and when there have been private interests that benefit enough and there's enough of a compromise, he has been willing to move away from his pledge. So that is clearly not an ironclad pledge, and it's not one in this day that seems to have meaning to me.
Carolyn, you're here only to represent yourself, but I'm curious about, you must talk with other parents at the schools where your children attend. Do they share your same frustrations and even worry about the district schools?
Yeah, I think parents are very worried. I think, you know, it's a common topic. Another common topic is this year we decide we can't do the public schools anymore in Philadelphia, that it's just not an option. And we certainly see parents leaving at both schools.
Leaving the city,
leaving for private schools. I think also we see teachers leaving. You know, that's, for me, is part of the trend that's most troubling. At both of the schools this year, at least five teachers have left. And in some ways, it's hard to blame them. They're looking at uncertain future, and in many cases, actually in all of them, they were certified teachers. They had higher degrees. They could go elsewhere and be paid and be in much better working conditions than where they are. So I don't blame them, but it does worry me that, you know, we're losing the flight of teachers from the district.
And leaving because of all these sort of ongoing crises and questions.
Yeah.
What keeps you teaching, Sam?
Well, I was going to tag on to, like, teachers leaving. Looking at even at Bieber this year, like, half of our staff has left. And so September is going to be, like, a completely new year. In fact, our principal isn't even returning back at our school. So, I'm like I say, I left Bieber, like, bittersweetly, but I just had to look at other opportunities. Particularly, I don't know if the district was going to do enough to, like, make it a sustaining, thriving, you know, institution.
But you're staying in the district. I mean, these are new schools, innovative schools.
Yeah, these are new schools. And so my hope is that these new schools provide opportunity to model that we can transform schools with, again, the U School, which I'll be working at, is an open admission school. So we're taking kids from, not based on test scores or socioeconomic conditions, but we're creating the kind of schools, the approach. We're going to be doing project-based learning with competency-based skills where we meet kids where they are. It's really student-focused, a real student-focused school. And so by creating those kind of opportunities, we can provide a model. And these can also be done not just at special boutique schools, but even at neighborhood schools as well.
We have an email from Joel. And what happened to the Rendell administration's proposal to include a portion of casino revenues to go to Philly schools? I'm going to toss that to you, Donna, because you were at Rendell's chief of staff when he was governor. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the casino revenues were proposed and used to reduce the local share of funding necessary for schools. So what happened is about $1 billion a year in casino revenues are helping decrease the amount that school districts have to raise from their local property taxes and use state funds for that. So those monies are going for exactly what they were intended to do, but they're not going to raise much higher. I mean, they're at the high water mark that they're going to be at in terms of what was predicted. In fact, they're hitting the targets pretty exactly of what was predicted that would be available to school districts to decrease to some extent the property tax demands on parents, as well as to ensure that local school districts could generate local revenue. But I think the thing about the situation that Terry Lynn and Sam and I and all the residents in our region are in is the important question about the Rendell casino revenues is during those 8 years when Ed Rendell was governor, and I'm not just saying that obviously because I was there, but there were 8 years of increased funding for education. And we did not see an annual catastrophe being played out where layoff notices were being considered, where teachers were being removed and moving en masse, as in Sam just described in Bieber, because the state was increasing and moving towards its 50% share and passed a school funding formula. And now we are in the fourth year of a crisis of unpredictability, not just for Philadelphia, but for every school district in our region. Just the budget that was passed in the House earlier last week is a $20 million cut for school districts across the Philadelphia suburbs and $16 million cut for Philadelphia. School districts that are already taxing themselves very high and slashing programs. And so what worries me is that we have these geniuses like Sam with this great model, And whether it's in Philly or across our region, those things are not going to be sustainable unless we really change the conversation at the state level.
And that's Donna Cooper, Executive Director of PCCY, that's Public Citizens for Children and Youth, joining us from Harrisburg, where legislators are jockeying as it deals with the budget deficit. We are focusing on the budget deficit for Philadelphia schools, but as Donna said, districts from Allentown and others are also in Harrisburg, because while Philadelphia is the largest city, it's not alone in this budget crisis. Sam Reed with us as well. He was a literacy teacher at Bieber Middle School for the past 16 years. In September, he's going to move to a new school. It's an innovative high school called the U, that's the letter U school. Tara Lynn McCormick has three children in the Philadelphia Public Schools, one at Kappa, that's Creative and Performing Arts, one who has been at Penn Alexander, and a kindergartner who will start at Penn Alexander in the fall. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What can we do to better fund schools? Terilyn, I don't know if this is a political question for you or not. Do you have a position on the School Reform Commission? Do you? Well, it came in, obviously, it was represented a state takeover of the Philadelphia Public Schools. Has it served the district from your perspective?
I don't think it has, and it's particularly frustrating. I know I'm not the only parent who feels this way, is that we work really hard, lobby really hard to continue to get funding for our schools, but yet we have no control over how the money is spent. So I certainly am for the effort to move that to some form of local control or more local representation, because it's very frustrating to go to the SRC. They don't deliberate in public, so you don't see any kind of conversations happening. And often, in many cases, the resolutions are not made available until after the speaker deadline has passed. So you can't even speak intelligently or represent your views as a citizen and a parent. So I think it's absolutely important in the future that we move to some form of local control. I also, most schools have school districts have some form, whether it's appointed or elected. And it just seems to me, why shouldn't Philadelphia have that same ability?
Sam, do you feel you want to weigh in on that as well as a teacher?
I kind of wanted to pivot back to Donna's point and kind of ask her a question.
Please.
Is this like a manufactured crisis, or like is this crisis just, again, it's happening year after year after year. So some of us are wondering, is it manufactured, and what's the end goal of creating the crisis,
Donna, do you have an answer to that?
Well, I think, yes, it's a manufactured crisis because the legislature has choices in front of it, and it's choosing to not support resources for public education. So is it intentionally manufactured? Yeah, perhaps on the part of some, but mostly it's, sort of benign neglect and the desire to not do anything with taxes. I think there are some ideological forces at work in the legislature that have a very strong aversion to the idea of public education. They call public schools monopoly schools, but that's a very, very small group here. I mean, look, most of these House and Senate members go home to school districts and superintendents and school board members, and they've sent their kids to public schools. So I think by and large, this building has a very clear understanding of the stresses the public schools are under, and basically they're dodging. And one of the biggest dodges goes to this issue of the School Reform Commission. I mean, the Philadelphia School District is controlled by the governor. It's under state control, under the Pennsylvania Department of Education, and the governor's office has a majority of appointees. When Governor Ridge took the school district over, the district was $200 million in deficit, and it was considered the crisis that required the state to step in. And now we're $440 million in deficit, and we've been under state control for all that time. So I don't think governance is a silver bullet, and I personally would want the state to fund the schools before we got it back. And I worry that if we let the state off the hook, not that there's any evidence of them being on the hook funds the schools, but I think it's pretty certain if they're not on the hook, they won't fund the schools. And I would say that urban districts across the state who have appointed elected school boards, whether it's Lancaster or Allentown or Pittsburgh, they face the same crisis. They have a shortage of state funds, and they have rising number of students in poverty, and they are unable to make ends meet. And that will not be solved by changes in governance. It will only be solved by a legislature that has enough public support to support the revenues necessary to fund the schools.
Sam, let me go back to you because, having had Height and Green, both Bill Height and Bill Green on the show recently, they did talk about the union and talked about teachers, you know, giving some things back or paying for some of their health insurance. I don't know how comfortable you feel being public about this, but there is some pressure, it seems to be, on teachers in Philadelphia as well.
Yeah, and again, I think we've made big sacrifices already. In fact, some teachers didn't receive, you know, raises that they were expected. Like, so they've saved money there. Like, we haven't got an accounting of, like, what's been saved from that. And, you know, it's a negotiation. Our union president, Jerry Jordan, I think is trying to, you know, be transparent about trying to come to some kind of compromise. But it looks like they want to use, again, the crisis to institute, you know, changes that benefit other factors that really maybe not impact the bottom line as well, like around teacher tenure, like changing teacher tenure, which is like a big issue. It's not going to. Changing teacher tenure can be addressed, but it's not the problem. So let's focus. If we focus on the problem, I think that's more important than going on the fringes.
You're nodding your head, Tamara.
I agree. I mean, as a management consultant, I definitely would take issue with how Height and the SRC has handled its number one employees, the people who are the front line in its company. If we want to use a market model, which they like to use in a lot of references, but they don't want to actually use that when they talk about the teachers. You know, the teachers have a contract, actually they don't right now, but they have the obligation to have a contract, and they don't want to abide by that in terms. I think they also don't provide them a workplace. You know, I don't think many of us can imagine that we had to bring our own computer to our job, or that we had to bring our own pencil and pad to do work in a company. But yet that's the environment that the teachers are in today. So I think that, you know, it feels to me as a parent that I wish they spent more time partnering, really engaging and working with the teachers to help solve this crisis than doing what Sam said, which is kind of picking what feel like somewhat times pet issues that they're trying to kind of ram through in a situation where, you know, we are in a crisis. And I would say anything that's not hitting the bottom line, they should be tabling that for now. And, you know, just trying to identify, because I know the teachers have come to the table on health care and other things, take those savings, put those other things off there for future when we're not in the middle of a serious crisis where we're going to potentially lay off another 1,000-some staff in our schools.
And that's Carolyn McCormick, the management consultant. McCormick, the parent, or the combination of the two. Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That is Carolyn McCormick, and we're talking about the Philadelphia School District facing another budget crisis. It is, I guess, a kind of a D-Day in Harrisburg. The deadline for the budget for the state, like many states, is midnight tonight. Also with us, Sam Reed. He's been a teacher in the Philadelphia school system for 16 years, and by telephone, Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth, joining us from Harrisburg. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What's our way out of this problem? We'll be right back.
Whether you're just waking up or you're on your commute, the news is always happening. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Jennifer Lynn. WHYY and NPR's reporters are covering the stories around the block and across the globe that will fuel your day and keep you informed.
So if your alarm is set to 90.9 or we're the first preset on your car's radio,
it's radio so vibrant you can almost see it.
And our reporters never take shortcuts.
Morning Edition, weekday mornings on WHYY.
Welcome to The Soup. We are live in New York City. Could you imagine if other comedy shows were live from New York? This wouldn't be nearly as exciting.
On the next Fresh Air, Joel McHale. He's the host of The Soup on E!, starred on NBC's Community, and now appears in the new horror film, Deliver Us From Evil. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We tend to think about grief as all-consuming, stage after stage of misery that we slowly, if ever, climb out of. But most people don't experience grief like that at all. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, one woman's surprising story of life after loss and the latest research on grief and resilience. That's today at noon here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The news this morning from Harrisburg is that Governor Corbett and Republican lawmakers are offering Democrats a deal. Vote for our pension plan and we'll approve Philadelphia's proposal to add a $2 a pack tax on cigarettes. That money would go to offset the budget deficit facing the school district of Philadelphia. And again, the deadline for passing the budget is tonight at midnight. We have an explosion of phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Mark from Germantown to join us. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was just thinking of some ways that the city might be able to raise more money without finding new taxes, is to just enforce some of the existing laws concerning the quality of life in the city, such as the placement of illegal signs. If you go up and down Roosevelt Boulevard, you see signs all over the place on public property. I heard there's supposed to be a $70 fine for each sign. The parking authority seems to be very hypervigilant in Center City, but you see cars illegally parked all over the place in some of the poorer neighborhoods. Maybe they could enforce littering laws, fine people for littering.
Mm.
I see signs that say no dumping, $300 fine, and there'll be big piles of trash in front of it that look like it would probably cost more to obey the law and have it removed legally.
Well, Mark, let me toss it to you, actually to you, Donna Cooper, only because you worked in the Rendell administration. You know a bit about how government is supposed to work. Would enforcing things like fines, these sort of smaller fines, would that be a way to make up the money?
Well, I'm all for enforcing the fines, especially on the illegal signs. I think what's happening in the city with sort of bandit signs is an abomination, but those funds go to the city, and they should. Where the caller, I think, has a really good point is that the liquor by the drink tax that is supposed to be collected from bars across the city is not being collected effectively by the city. In addition, delinquent taxes are not being effectively collected, and those are both very large revenue sources. So while I think the bread and butter fines that the city ought to do to clean itself up and improve quality of life are important to pay attention to, they are appropriately fines collected for city operations. But we also need to do a better job of collecting the revenues owed to the school district, both from back taxes on property taxes and from liquor by the drink. So he's definitely on to something.
Yeah. Carolyn, any thoughts you have as Donna and our caller?
I think I'm in some ways agnostic in terms of the funding. I just would like to see more of it. So I think, to the extent that it makes the city a better place by enforcing these, and if we can, do a better job collecting the taxes, that's great. Right. I just, at the end of the day, I just want to see that there's more of it for our schools.
I mean, it sounds
Marty,
like... Yeah, go ahead, Donna.
One of the things I was going to say is, for people to keep in mind, basically the district is like a $2.8 billion budget. It costs about $15 million a week to educate our children. And so when we're thinking of solutions, they have to be at that scale. This is a big operation. The school district serves more meals than all the meals going out on the airplanes that fly out of the Philadelphia airport. They have a larger transportation system than SEPTA. This is a very large operation, and so it requires that we think big. And obviously we should think creatively, but again, I think the folks ought to recognize that in other states, like Maryland and Massachusetts, where they are at the top of the charts for student achievement at graduation, their states are investing 50% of the funds needed for quality education.
Mark, thanks for the call. Let me get Helen from New Jersey to join our conversation. Helen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. I am a school nurse in the district. One of the things that we deal with is being assigned to multiple schools. I have three different elementary schools, and I'm really concerned about the parents of those children who who have chronic conditions, and they know that there's no nurse in that school that day. And my other concern is for the staff of those schools, knowing that something could happen, and many times it does, and I'm not there. They all have my cell phone number. They call me whether I'm there, you know, when I'm not there, and ask what to do. And it's even though we leave plans for them, do this when this happens, it still comes up many times that they have to call me for advice on what to do. And you are so far away from that building, usually, that you can't just run over there and help them.
So you have to work it out or walk them through it on the telephone. Helen, I'm going
to
give...
You have to work it out with the phone. Sometimes it's, you know, you need to call 911 right now.
Right. Helen, let me give Sam Reed a chance to respond.
Yeah, and the other thing with nurses that I miss, because, again, we only have our nurse at our school twice. We had our nurse twice a week. We miss the relationship that having a nurse on staff every day is just a big hole. And then, I mean, God forbid the other tragic incidents of, you know, having to deal with cases of emergency, right? Because we're not trained professionally in that arena. But the relationship piece is also really, really significant. When we had a nurse every day, again, with a counselor or two counselors, kids had other buffers to go to for, you know, concerns, social, emotional issues. I mean, the nurse's role is really, you can't describe how important they are to the schools.
Helen, thanks for the call to Radio Times, because it seems, even just thinking back on my own schooling, it is about a relationship. I mean, in the final analysis is yes, learning things, but also feeling like you're learning from a caring person or a caring environment.
Right, and to go back, if a nurse is only there once or twice a week, it's harder to
cultivate. Yeah, and that workload just goes to other people in the school, too. There's still kids that need medicine. So as someone whose child takes a daily medicine, I feel a certain amount of guilt knowing that I'm pulling the principal into the office, you know, once a day to give my child the meds when the nurse isn't there. So that workload still has to happen. It just ends up getting put on the staff who's doing more and more and more with less.
Mm-hmm. And remember,
yeah, go ahead,
like, these are kids. They're going to fall. They're going to get hurt. They're kids. And so I think Terry Lynn's point is, you know, every day a kid's getting hurt in school for some reason. Mostly, you know, running around and being a kid during recess or on the way to school, and a teacher's going to be pulled out of a classroom because we are so short-staffed. We have a total of 157 nurses for 130,000 kids. It's ludicrous.
I do want to get back to our callers, but I do want to go back to you, Sam, and actually to you, Terrilyn and Donna. I mean, what's exciting is that you're going to be involved in this new school, this innovative sort of project learning school. But I know, having talked with Height and others, there are people with big ideas in this city and want to institute those ideas. But if all you're doing is just trying to put out fires or try to find a nurse who can come for a couple of hours during the week at a school, you can't institute some of these innovative ideas.
Yeah, and so I think the question is, like, looking at education as an investment. I don't get the feeling that the state is really considering education as an investment, because if they were, the things that Donna are saying wouldn't make any sense, because you would make that investment. This is why Maryland and this is why Massachusetts are making these investments, because they're trying to be competitive states to compete in the 21st century. So we're going to be left behind as a state.
Do you think about that, Terrilyn?
I was going to say, it also shows up in our, you know, job growth and economy in general. I don't think it's a surprise that Pennsylvania is lagging in many fronts. They're not making the needed investments in education and in healthcare. And I think you can just look to the states that are and see the results. So it is a bit of a puzzle in some ways when you look at what's going on in Harrisburg, that they don't make that connection between these very basic investments in our children, in our health of our communities, and what that reaps in terms of the benefits to our state.
I mean, Donna, it seems very short-sighted, I have to say. I mean, no one wants to pay more taxes or even ask people to pay more taxes, but to not make a big investment in education seems it's going to hurt the state in the long run, if not the short run.
And in communities where they have the local wherewithal to invest in their kids, they do, right? We all know that the Lower Merion School District invests heavily in its kids because it has the wherewithal to do that. So they're spending about twice as much per kid as Philly's spending, and they're getting twice the results. They have 90% of their kids getting proficient or advanced in the PSSAs, and we have 46. And they can do that. And one of the roles of the state is it's to be the great equalizer. to compensate for communities that don't have great wealth so that there is equality of opportunity in public education. One of the reasons that our Constitution says thorough and efficient education is when the framers of the Pennsylvania Constitution were debating what the state's role was in education, one of the state's richest endowers, very wealthy gentleman from Lancaster County, said, you know what, we really need to have the state square in the center of the public education funding system, because I don't trust that even us as rich people will do a good job raising our children, and we may lose our own benevolence. Mm-hmm. And we must have the state have this responsibility. Again, in certain communities in the state, there's extraordinary investment. And they aren't talking about how few nurses they have. They have an abundance of what's needed for their children to succeed. And I think what we're asking for, the three of us on this call, and certainly people listening, is shouldn't that be the opportunity that's afforded to every child in Pennsylvania, because it's good for the state and obviously good for them as individuals?
Let me get to Tom from Collingswood to join our conversation. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're
great
welcome.
Conversation.
Thank you.
I'll take my responses off air. So actually what was just being talked about is kind of leading into what my question was to your call, to your panel. I'm a 35-year veteran teacher in New Jersey, and so I can't really speak to what's going on in Philadelphia, but it seems not only in Philadelphia, not only in PA and New Jersey, but across the country, our country is sort of going more towards commercialization of education and not really the social value that will come out of the investment. There seems to be a disparity between what is the test, testing, a lack of value in student growth, more in an endpoint in that test score. The poorest communities are really in a class system that don't have the greatest opportunities available to them, but yet that seems to be where corporate education is heading. So I was just trying to figure out what your panel
sees.
In that area. Thank
Tom,
you.
You're welcome, Tom. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I'm looking at the two of you. Sam, do you want to take that? Do you agree? I mean, the commercialization, yes, there is competition. There are private schools. There are charter schools. I mean, what's happening in Philadelphia is a bit of an experiment in education.
Yeah, and I don't think teachers are opposed to, competition. We're not opposed to, evaluation, but we want also equity and fairness. And so the question begets, if in Lower Merion, if you're comparing what I can do with students at Bieber, say Bieber Middle School, with
right.
less resources, with kids that are having more, then where's the fairness? And then also, like, what's the best way of evaluating? What's the best way of making assessments? And I think with the Common Core state standards, they're like stretching kids and stretching teachers to do more, but it just doesn't have to be dependent on a test. And so, in fact, there may be a movement of where folks are looking at alternative ways of assessing.
Yeah. What for you, Terrellyn?
I think, again, I think public school is under some sort of attack across the country. I'm not sure, there's lots of roots for that, but I think you can look to, even my public school education. If you talk to people who've lived here in Philadelphia about what was provided in the public schools, 50 years ago, it's clear that we are investing less and less in our schools. And as I said, we continue to normalize that we're getting less and less. So I do think there are concerns for this model, which is unfortunate, because I do think it is really the pillar in some ways of our democracy, is that we believe all our kids are entitled to an education, and that that's our responsibility to them.
Donna, what are you going to be doing for the rest of the day?
Well, we'll be visiting offices here, trying to encourage people to have the creativity necessary to reach a compromise so that the cigarette tax extension increases passed in Philadelphia. We'll be expressing our outrage at the way in which they're proposing to fund the schools, which really is doing everything it can to direct money away from struggling poor school districts like Philadelphia and Southeast Delco and William Penn, and it's pretty much a slap in the face in terms of what's happening at the state level and what they think they need to do with educational resources versus what we know on the ground is needed based on the examples raised in this conversation. So we're going to be visiting folks. We have a lot of parents up here, and we're hoping that Philadelphians and people in the southeastern part of the state are calling their state representatives and senators to let them know that they need to do right by the schools that are facing the greatest struggle.
There's a caller, we can't take it, we don't have time, from Johannes from Mount Airy. He's worked with and for the district for a long time. This district seems to be unmanageable. What about breaking it up and making it into smaller ones? And since you're our management consultant here, Terrellyn, do you think there's some truth to that?
I think it's certainly something to be explored. It is very large. I think, though, that it all has to be done properly. I think, you know, the charter school movement, and that's a big portion of our schools now in Philadelphia, has happened in a way, in a somewhat unregulated, ungoverned approach. And we've seen, you know, some of the abuses that occur with that. So I think any model that looks at that has to also look very closely at how that's structured, mm-hmm. And make sure that the proper oversight is in place. But it certainly, to me, I think, should be on the table, you know, for a conversation.
Sam, we're almost out of time, but since you're our teacher here, are you ready for the school year, or are you just sort of watching and waiting to see what's going to happen with the district?
Yeah, so, forget the concept of summer's off. You know, for a lot of teachers like myself, summer is like the opportunity where we're retooling, regenerating, and so this summer, actually, I'm going to be doing professional development, getting ready for the new school that I'm going to be going to. And I'm also going to be running some, if I can put in the plug, I'm going to be running Boys Right Now art and writing workshops through Scholastic and the Philadelphia Writing Project. And the Be Me is giving me an award to, like, expand this work. So I'm excited. I'll be running art and writing workshops across the town.
Well, good for you. And thank you so much, Sam Reed, for your work as a teacher. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And Terrellyn McCormick, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Donna Cooper, thank you for joining us. Good luck there out in Harrisburg today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. In fact, sign up for our newsletter, and we'll keep you in the know when it comes to upcoming programs. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.